0005. If you attempted to teleport to a location inside the Oasis that was already occupied by an object or another avatar, the system would automatically adjust your arrival coordinates to the closest unoccupied location. When I finished rematerializing, I discovered that the system had placed me directly in front of Lohengrin's avatar, which was currently in its female form. She was seated about a meter away, wearing her trademark Legend of Billie Jean attire, a baggy pair of men's trousers tucked into a pair of cowboy boots, with a sleeveless neon-colored wetsuit as her top. She didn't notice my arrival because my avatar was invisible. Her eyes were also closed, but that just meant she was engaged and currently had her attention focused elsewhere, like on a phone call or a private chat room. Lohengrin would most likely still be monitoring her avatar's view of this room via a small video feed window in the corner of her HUD. Middletown was located in a PvP zone, making it a risky place to leave your avatar unattended. I looked around and saw that we weren't in Kira's old bedroom at the Barnett residence. We were 3 blocks north of that location in the world-famous wood-paneled basement of Ogden Morrow's childhood home. This was where Morrow, Halliday, and their close-knit group of friends spent most of their free time. They gathered here after school and on the weekends to escape to other worlds via dozens of tabletop role-playing games. Og's basement would also later serve as the first office of Gregarious Games, the company that Halliday and Morrow co-founded after high school, which evolved into Gregarious Simulation Systems a few decades later when they launched the Oasis. In the real Middletown, Ohio, Og's childhood home had been demolished decades ago to make room for a block of condominiums. But here in the Oasis, Halliday had recreated his best friend's childhood home in loving detail, along with his own home and the rest of their hometown, using old maps, photographs, and video footage for reference. Like everything else in the Middletown simulation, Og's basement looked just like the real thing had back in the late 1980s. Vintage movie and comic book posters covered the walls. 3 beat-up couches were arranged in a U-shape in front of an old RCA television, which was half buried by a Betamax VCR, a Pioneer Laserdisc player, and several different classic home video game consoles. On the other side of the room, a bunch of folding chairs were clustered around a scarred wooden table covered with multicolored polyhedral dice. A row of bookshelves lined the far wall, each crammed to capacity with role-playing game supplements and back issues of Dragon magazine. 2 ground-level windows looked out onto the Morrow's backyard, where a fat orange sun hovered above the horizon, silhouetting a rusting swing set in the neighbor's yard. Being in this room filled me with fond memories of my own teenage years, because in a strange way, I'd grown up here too. Back when we were in high school, H had modeled her private Oasis chat room after Ogden Morrow's basement, and the two of us spent countless hours there over the years. Talking, gaming, doing our homework, listening to old music, watching old movies, daydreaming about the things we would do when we won Halliday's fortune. My life had been a lot harder back then, but in retrospect, it now also seemed a hell of a lot simpler. I glanced back over at Lohengrin. Her avatar's eyes were still closed, and they were still darting around rapidly beneath her eyelids, as if she were in REM sleep. I was about to make my avatar visible and alert her to my presence, but then a better idea occurred to me. I selected Lohengrin's avatar on my display and pulled up a list of her active communication processes. It told me that she was currently logged into a private chat room called Cyberdelia, which was hosted by a 59th level avatar named Castigear. If Lohengrin really had found one of the shards, she might be in that private chat room discussing it with her friends. Or, if she was bullshitting me, she might be in there discussing that instead. And my robes let me enter private chat rooms uninvited and undetected, allowing me to eavesdrop on their occupants. This was a trick I'd learned from the great and powerful Og himself, the only other avatar in the Oasis who had this ability. I tapped the small door icon at the edge of my display to activate my chat room interface, then searched for the one named Cyberdelia and tapped the login button. My view of Og's basement shrank from the limits of my peripheral vision to a small window in the corner of my display, and I suddenly found myself standing just inside the chat room's entrance. Cyberdelia was a multi-level warehouse space filled with archaic late 20th century technology and retro-futurist decor. Oddly adorned mannequins, payphones, rollerblade ramps, and air hockey tables were scattered around the club, and its walls were covered with graffiti urging its denizens to hack the planet. When I recognized the old techno song playing on the sound system, Cowgirl by Underworld, I made the connection and smiled. This was a recreation of the underground cyberpunk nightclub featured in the 1995 film Hackers. From my position near the entrance, the chat room looked deserted, but over the blaring music, I could hear several overlapping voices engaged in a heated conversation. I ventured further inside, following the noise, until I spotted five avatars gathered on one of the club's upper-level catwalks. They were sitting and standing around a circular table made from an empty wooden cable spool. Lohengrin was among them, gesturing excitedly as she spoke to the others. Being careful not to bump into any furniture, I moved closer until I could make out what she was saying. From this distance, I was also able to read the name tags floating above the other four avatars' heads: Castagir, Rizzo, Lilith, and Wukong. "You are so full of shit, Lo," the one named Wukong said in a deep voice. "Even more than usual, which is saying something." His avatar was a tall half-man, half-monkey creature, which explained the name. Sun Wukong was a character from Chinese mythology known as the Monkey King. "Come on, Kong," Lohengrin said, rolling her eyes. "Why would I lie about something like this?"
"To try and impress us," Castagir said.
The chat room's enormous host was leaning against an iron girder with his massive arms folded across his chest. He was a human male with ebony skin and a giant frohawk that added at least a foot to his already impressive height. He wore a brightly colored dashiki and a long, curved sword in an ornate scabbard, just like the character of the same name in the original Highlander film. Lilith took a step forward. Her avatar was a young woman with shaggy turquoise-colored hair, dressed in torn black jeans, combat boots, and a dark blue hoodie. She appeared to be going for a turn-of-the-century, edgy emo look. "Of course the ignorant males doubt you," she said, "but I believe you, sister."
"So do I, Lo," Rizzo added, popping her bubblegum.
Her avatar's inspiration made me grin again. The character of the same name in the movie version of Grease, a young Stockard Channing wearing a black motorcycle jacket and a pair of oversized sunglasses. But this Rizzo had a touch of Columbia from Rocky Horror, with fishnet stockings and a glittery gold top hat. "Thank you, ladies," Lohengrin said, bowing to them. Wukong snorted like an angry gorilla.
"Okay," he said. "If you really found one of the shards, then why don't you show us some proof? A screenshot or sim cap or something."
"I will," Lohengrin said, putting her boots up on the table and her hands behind her head. "As soon as I finish collecting my reward."
"I bet Parzival gets thousands of emails about the shards every day," Castagir said. "He probably stopped reading them years ago."
"He'll read mine," Lohengrin said. "Parzival knows I wouldn't waste his time with a bogus lead. He's one of my subscribers, remember?" She mimed, brushing dust off of her shoulder.
"Really?" Lilith said, feigning surprise. "Parzival is one of your subscribers? You've never mentioned this before."
"It's okay," she said, playfully punching Wukong in the shoulder. "I know you're just jealous. I would be too if I were you, Caesar."
Wukong pointed a finger at her. "And I warned you about Planet of the Apes jokes, Goldilocks."
"I know," she said, smiling.
"And it was a scary warning, too. Made a big impression."
"Hold on," Lilith said. "What's to stop Parzival from taking it and teleporting away without paying you a dime?"
"Parzival would never do that," Lohengrin said. "He's a righteous dude."
"He's a rich nutjob who acts like a total douchebag on social media," Lilith said. "He also likes to hunt and kill his detractors for sport, remember? You shouldn't trust him."
"You guys are also cynical," Lohengrin said, shaking her head. "Have a little faith."
"We just don't want to see you get ripped off is all," Rizzo said.
"If it makes you guys feel any better, I plan to record my entire conversation with Parzival, just in case I need to prove it took place." They all studied her for a moment.
"You're not kidding about this," Wukong said. "You really found something."
Lohengrin nodded excitedly.
1 billion simoleons, Rizzo said, shaking her head and smiling. "Have you already figured out what you're going to do with it?"
Lohengrin grinned at her, then glanced around at each of the others.
"I thought you'd never ask," she replied. "First, I'm going to buy a big house in Columbus for all of us to live in together. It's going to have a big kitchen that's always full of food. We'll each have our own room, and in the basement, we'll have our own private classic video game arcade where we can all hang out. She paused to take in a large breath of air. I'll also make sure our new crib has the fastest Oasis connection money can buy, she went on. Then, once it's ready, I'll fly you all up to it. We're all going to grow old there together, and we'll never have to depend on anyone else ever again. They all stared back at her. Seriously? Castagir asked in a voice that was almost a whisper. You'd do that? Lohengrin nodded and then crossed her heart. Guys, she said, you're my four best friends in the world. My only friends, if we're being honest. And ever since my mom died, you've been my only family, too. Of course this is what I want to do. She looked like she was about to sob, but then she forced out a laugh instead. Besides, we're the low five. We promised to stick together forever, right? Lilith reached out and squeezed one of Lohengrin's hands. Castagir's lower lip began to tremble, and he turned away in an attempt to conceal it. Rizzo had tears in her eyes, but she was smiling. I was smiling and tearing up, too, I realized. It was heartbreakingly fitting that these kids had nicknamed themselves the Low Five, because the bond that Lohengrin shared with her friends reminded me of the one I'd shared with the other members of the High Five during the contest. But it also reminded me just how much it had faded over the years. God damn it, Wukong roared. He reached up to wipe his eyes on the back of his furry simian forearm. Cut it out before you fools make me start bawling too. The others all laughed at that, and it made Wukong crack up also. I was suddenly filled with an overwhelming desire to find out who these people were in real life and how they all knew one another. For a normal Oasis user, learning the identity of Lo and her friends would have been impossible. But for me, it was as simple as selecting all of their avatars on my HUD. Then I instructed the system to scan each of their Oasis accounts and display any obvious similarities or connections between them. It informed me that Lohengrin, Wukong, Rizzo, Lilith, and Castagir were all either 19 or 20 years old in age, and that all five of them had graduated from the same Oasis public school on Ludus II a few years ago, OPS number 1126. These Gunters were old high school friends, just like me and H, and all five of them had enrolled in GSS's Disadvantaged Youth Empowerment Program, which provided free ONI headsets and Oasis consoles to orphaned and or destitute kids around the world. I suddenly felt like a jerk for eavesdropping on their conversation. So I logged out of the chat room and resumed control of my avatar back inside Og's basement on Middletown. But I was still invisible, so Lohengrin couldn't see me. I stood there for a few seconds, staring down at her avatar, pretending to wrestle with my conscience. Then I went ahead and pulled up Lohengrin's private account profile to find out her real-world identity. I justified violating her right to privacy as an Oasis user the way I always did, by telling myself it was necessary. Before I accepted Lohengrin's help in return for $1 billion, I had to find out as much as I could about her to get a sense of who I would be dealing with. But that was a bullshit excuse, and I knew it. What it really boiled down to was plain old curiosity. I was curious about who Lohengrin was in the real world, and I had the ability to find out. So I did. Lohengrin's real name was Skylar Castillo Adkins. According to her private user profile, she was an unmarried 19-year-old Caucasian female, and she lived in the Duncanville, Texas stacks, a sprawling vertical slum near the apocalyptic epicenter of the DFW Metroplex. It was an even rougher neighborhood than the one I'd grown up in. Since I'd already violated her privacy, I decided to go full on Big Brother and have a look at her headset feeds. There were 10 wide-angle surveillance cameras mounted on the exterior of each ONI headset, which allowed the wearer to keep an eye on their body and its surroundings from inside the Oasis. The Robes of Anorak gave me access to a secret submenu on every ONI user's account where I could monitor the video feeds coming from those cameras, meaning I had the ability to spy on people in their homes. This was one of GSS's uglier secrets, and there would be riots and class action lawsuits galore if our customers ever found out about it. But these were exceptional circumstances, I assured myself. When I pulled up Skylar's headset feeds, I was not prepared for what I saw. The darkened interior of an ancient Airstream trailer lit up bright green by the night vision filters. I could see a helper bot silently washing dishes at the miniature kitchen sink, It was a battered Okagami swap bot, so named because it could be used as both a telebot and an autonomous domestic helper robot. It had a sawed-off pistol grip pump shotgun in a makeshift holster strapped to its back, so she apparently used it to do more than just the dishes. In the foreground of several of Skylar's headset camera feeds, I could also see her. Her thin, frail-looking body was stretched out on a worn mattress in the back of the trailer. Like a lot of people who lived in the stacks, she appeared to be suffering from borderline malnutrition. Her gaunt features seemed to conflict with the pleasant, dreamlike expression on her face. Someone had laid an old Snoopy blanket over her to keep her warm, or... No, she must have done this to herself using her telebot, because she was all alone, with no one to rely on but herself. My chest felt hollow. I closed all of the vid feed windows and scanned Skylar's user profile for more information about her. Her school records included a scan of her birth certificate, which revealed another surprise. She'd been DMAB, designated male at birth. Discovering this minor detail didn't send me spiraling into a sexual identity crisis the way it probably would have back when I was younger. Thanks to years of surfing the OniNet, I now knew what it felt like to be all kinds of different people, having all different kinds of sex. I'd experienced sex with women while being another woman, and sex with men as both a woman and a man. I'd done playback of several different flavors of straight and gay and non-binary sex just out of pure curiosity, and I'd come away with the same realization that most ONI users came away with. Passion was passion and love was love, regardless of who the participants involved were or what sort of body they were assigned at birth. According to Skylar's user profile history, she'd legally changed her gender to female when she was 16, a few months after she received her first ONI headset. Around the same time, she'd changed her avatar's sex classification to zero gender, a brand new option GSS had added due to popular demand. People who identified as zero gender were individuals who chose to experience sex exclusively through their ONI headsets, and who also didn't limit themselves to experiencing it as a specific gender or sexual orientation. Coming out as zero gender became incredibly common in the wake of the ONI's release. For the first time in human history, anyone 18 years of age or older could safely and easily experience sexual intercourse with any gender and as any gender. This tended to alter their perception of gender identity and fluidity in profound ways. It had certainly altered mine. And I was certain it had done the same thing for every other ONI user with even a mildly adventurous spirit. Thanks to the Oasis neural interface, your gender and your sexuality were no longer constrained by or confined to the physical body you happened to be born into. Skylar's profile also indicated she had no living family members. Her mother, Iris Adkins, had died of heart failure 2 years ago. Somehow, Skylar had been living on her own since she was 17, in the DFW stacks, no less. I heard movement and quickly closed Skylar's user profile. Then I glanced back over at her avatar, just in time to see Lohengrin's eyes flicker open, an indication that she'd logged out of Castigir's chat room. Her avatar stood up and began to walk toward the exit. I was standing directly in her path. Instead of stepping out of her way, I folded my arms and assumed an ominous wizard pose. Then I made my avatar visible once again.